Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. We love our cats and dogs. From the new commercial cat food selling premium ingredients to pet parents, they call them pet parents, to the new section at the card store for dog birthdays and sympathy cards for the loss of your pet. More and more of us see our pets as members of the family. But legally, they're members of a family we own. So science writer David Grimm explores that tension in a new book, Between Our Emotional Bonds with Our Pets and What Changing That Legal Status Might Mean for Society. His book is called Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. Welcome to WNYC, David Grimm.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
So you launched this research when you found yourself spending thousands of dollars at a trauma center to save a kitten you'd adopted only a few months before. And you wonder, just how crazy were you? What did you conclude?
Well, that's right. And I concluded I wasn't as crazy as I thought. About 8 years ago, our kitten, Jasper, who was only about 5-6 months old at the time, we'd only had him for about 3 or 4 months. We had adopted him and his sister, Jezebel, from a shelter. And he went into massive kidney failure. We didn't know why. We rushed him to a pet ER just north of Baltimore City. He ended up being there for about 3 days, was put on IVs and antibiotics. And, you know, they did ultrasounds, and he saw a specialist, he saw an internist and a urologist, I believe. And it all added up to about $3,000. And, you know, it got me thinking because, first of all, the idea that you're able to spend that much on an animal is remarkable. The idea that there are these specialists in it right now is remarkable. And I started to feel a little crazy, but then I looked around the waiting room and, you know, I saw families there that are crying over a dog that just died, or, you know, an elderly couple that's pulling out a second credit card to pay for the treatment to save their cat's lives. And I really started to wonder, you know, maybe I'm not so crazy. Maybe I'm not the crazy cat guy. Maybe this is really where we are right now as a society.
And did you come to any conclusions about why we're there as a society? Is it urbanization, delayed child rearing, so they've lost their job, so to speak, as herders and mousers, in the urban environment, and now their main purpose seems to be filling emotional vacuums?
Yeah, it's a great question. Why now? Because cats and dogs have lived with us for thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of years. And why is it only in the last couple of decades that they've really become bona fide family members, at least widely accepted in society as bona fide family members? I think it's a number of factors. I think you have, as you mentioned, Brian, urbanization. We're living in smaller homes where we tend to lead more lonely lives. We're living by ourselves. Divorce rates are up. People are having less children. We've had the disappearance of all other animals from the cities. You know, cities used to be filled with livestock and slaughterhouses. All that's disappeared. You know, nature becomes more removed from our lives. So, and then I think in the last couple of decades, especially, you've had a rise in technology. So we spend so much time on our iPads and on the computer, and we're virtually talking to people. We're not talking to people in real life anymore. We all go out to a coffee shop as a group, but then we all stare at our iPhones. And I think all of this together has created this really deep emotional void that cats and dogs, they've always been there. And now they're like, hey, we're ready to fill that. We're ready to be that friend who's just ignoring you for a glowing screen. We're ready to be that family member that walked out the door, or the children that have left for college. They're just there to fill that need we have in our modern society.
David Grimm, author of Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. And listeners, you pet owners, or should I call you pet guardians, is there a law or regulation that you and your cat or dog have come up against that you would like to see changed, maybe in the pet's favor? 212-433-WNYC, veterinarians and groomers and walkers in the audience, do you want to weigh in on the changes you've seen in how we treat our pets and how we expect you to treat them? 212-433-9692. Do you need different approaches for the owners of old school pets versus the surrogate children pets in your practice as a vet or whatever you do that comes in contact with our household animals? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And David, the title of your book is Citizen Canine. So let's talk about the legal status of cats and dogs. Let's see. Corporations have the same legal status as a person now. We've gotten that from the Supreme Court. How about and cats?
Well, dogs and cats have been on this really remarkable legal journey. Just a century ago, they were considered so worthless, they weren't even considered property. So I talk about a case in Baltimore where a man went into a woman's yard, stole her cat. He was brought before a judge, and this was about in 1894. And the judge couldn't convict him because cats weren't property. So he had legally done nothing wrong. And then you start to see in the early 1900s, as pets become more ingrained in the family, that they do become property. They become as valuable as a couch or a toaster. And then as the decades wear on, people say, you know what, I don't really think of my cat or a dog as a couch or a toaster. And that's where we've had a really interesting blurring of the legal line, especially in the last couple of decades, where you've had custody cases over pets where a judge will say, well, what's in the best interest of the cat? What home would the cat be happiest in, which you would never do for a table or a chair or a lamp? We've had pets now are able to inherit money, and that shouldn't technically be possible because pets are property and money is property and property shouldn't be able to inherit property. But that's a law in several states. In fact, most states now that pets can inherit money. Owners of slain pets can recover now in some courts for emotional distress damages, non-economic damages, which are typically only available to spouses and children of slain parents and spouses. So they've really started to, even though they're still technically property, they've really, I think, come closer than any other animal to really blurring that line between property and person.
Do these laws come out of the anti-cruelty movement?
Some of them do. One of the very first laws that really helped protect dogs and cats and other animals arose in the 1860s in New York, actually, with the founding of the ASPCA, which was really the first national organization to adopt cruelty laws and to actually had ASPCA police officers on the street that could arrest you for being cruel. At the beginning, it was really focused on New York's horses, but as time went on and people saw the suffering of homeless cats and dogs in the street, the ASPCA really turned its attention to cats and dogs, which I think it's fair to say is their primary mission today, along with the Humane Society of the United States. So that's where it all begins. But when you start having things in terms of the courtroom, that I think that's not as much with the Humane Societies. I think that's more with just a legal change, a legal movement, and just changing opinions with judges and legislators that are saying, you know, I have a cat or a dog, and I don't view them as like a toaster, and I'm not comfortable with a ruling that says this cat is worthless or this dog is only worth $50. So I think that's why you're starting to see some changes in the legal system.
But could legal status for pets also place obligations on their owners that may put them in difficult circumstances? For example, in Boulder, pet owners are now termed pet guardians, for example, right? But pet
That's
guardians
right.
could be forced to treat illnesses in their pets, or they could be subject to, you know, pet welfare if the dog was cooped up inside too much.
That's right.
The Pet Resources Administration of the city would come and, you know, seize your pet and put it in a foster pet guardian home, something like that.
That's right. So, I mean, there have been what's called guardian language adopted in about 20 cities and the entire state of Rhode Island. And what that does is if you have an animal-related ordinance, it will refer to the owner and sometimes will also refer to the owner as a guardian. And in some places, I think maybe in Boulder, it actually uses the word guardian instead of owner. Now, those changes aren't legally significant in the fact that it's just a nomenclature change. But a lot of groups are really worried that if it does become a legally significant change, then we'll have exactly the kind of stuff you talked about, Brian, that we'll have pet protective services showing up at your house if you're not walking your dog three times a day, or if you don't decide not to spring for your cat's chemotherapy. You know, could an organization come over and say you're not a fit guardian and we're going to take your pet away like they would or like they might for your children? So there's good consequences of elevating the status of cats and dogs. They get more protection, they're more cared for, which I think a lot of people would be in favor of. But others are really worried about this slippery slope, the idea that elevating the status too much, especially legally, is going to create undue burdens on owners, on veterinarians who might getting sued for large malpractice suits, which has already happened. Even biomedical researchers in the agriculture industry are worried, you know, if pets start become people in the eyes of the law, what's to stop lab rats from becoming people? what's to stop cows from becoming people. So I think we're at this really interesting turning point with pets where we have to decide, are we comfortable where they are now, or do we want to elevate their status even further?
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio, with David Grimm, author of Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Dogs and Cats, or it's, nope, sorry, it's Cats and Dogs. It doesn't rain dogs and cats, so, you know, I don't know why I said that. Twain in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, how you doing? I think in terms of the laws, I feel like you should allow more dogs into public spaces. So I go to my local, I live in Fort Greene, and I have a doggy daycare in Brooklyn too, actually.
I'm sorry, if there's a question, I'm not hearing it. I've got silence on my end.
Okay, well, we'll tell you what he said afterwards. There's okay. A little technical problem. But, Twain, go ahead and finish.
Yeah, so I'll go to my local, like, hardware store, Home Depot, for example, and they don't allow the dogs inside. But then if you tie the dogs outside, I think it opens up a case for the dogs getting hurt, people stealing the dogs and stuff like that. So I think in terms of laws, I think they should allow dogs because I have three dogs of my own, into public spaces a little bit more, certain spaces.
Twain, thank you very much. He asked that dogs be allowed into stores and other public spaces more rather than people having to tie them up outside so much because it can be dangerous to the dogs depending on the circumstances. Is there a thrust of legal activism with respect to that dogs be allowed into stores more? I heard some people on the subway this morning, a very crowded subway car that I was riding in on the morning A train, actually, you know, debating the idea of whether it should be easier for a dog to come on the subway.
It's a great question, and there actually is a movement. People will probably notice that you're seeing more dogs in restaurants, that you're seeing more stores and businesses allow dogs. And it used to be in the past it was only guide dogs or assistant dogs that had these special privileges, that they could pretty much go anywhere a cane could. They could be on airplanes and they could be on trains and in restaurants. And it didn't matter if customers had a problem with it, you know, thanks to the Americans with Disabilities Act, that could happen. And so now you have people saying, well, what about just ordinary dogs and cats? I guess you probably wouldn't bring your cat into a store for most purposes, but especially dogs. You know, why can't I bring my dog in here? He's a member of the family, just the way my children are, maybe. And why can't I bring him to the post office or whatever? And so you're definitely seeing a movement for that, and you're starting to see more and more businesses allowing that to happen.
Then, of course, there could be health consequences if you start That's allowing right. animals into places where food is served and things like
That's
that.
That's right.
Stacy
right.
in Fairfield County, you're on WNYC. You own a pet care business?
Yes. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show as I drive around taking
Thank you.
Care of my pets.
Thanks a lot.
My comment is, as a pet owner and parent, and I've done a lot of volunteer work with the guide dogs that your guest mentioned, I think that the biggest problem that I'm encountering is because of the way people are treating their pets more and more like children, like people, that they're running into so much difficulties with training, with behavior issues. And I have to say that I have to turn away so many dogs now because they sleep in clients' beds at night and they can't make it to be home by themselves in a house. Or, you know what I mean? It's like the same problems you run into with kids. These people are treating their dogs like toddlers, and they're not. They're dogs. You know, at the end of the day, I don't think it's a good idea to let ordinary dogs go into restaurants.
Okay. So what happens, Stacy, when somebody has treated their pet that way and then you try to take care of them? I guess you would house pets for a few days, like when people go away?
Exactly. I have a business where I arrange house sitters for people at their homes, as well as I do board just a few dogs in my own home.
Right. So what are the ones that are treated too much like people do when they get in your care?
They're very anxious animals. They they have terrible separation anxiety. And because of that, they will cry, bark, pace. They can't settle down. They can't relax with other dogs, and they can't sleep through the night even. I'm not saying this is all dogs. However, the people that have trained the dogs the best, that treat them more like dogs, you know, obviously in a kind, loving way, but set rules and boundaries for dogs, that's what makes a great pet, and that's what makes a happy dog.
They can't sleep through the night. Ferberize the dogs.
I know. People can't ferberize their dogs. They tell me how tired they are because the dog jumps off and on the bed all night. But then they can't put the dog in a kennel, or they can't leave the dog with a friend because the dog just has, you know, detachment issues and just can't function.
Stacy, thank you. I'm going to go on to Helen in Brooklyn. Hi, Helen. You're on WNYC.
Good morning. Love your show.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to make a point. I'm with Brooklyn Bars. We're a dog walking and pet sitting service in Brooklyn. And we offer a pet CPR first aid course that we would love to have more of the public participate in, because as most people find out at the last moment when there's an emergency, dogs and cats react very differently from humans, although the anatomy is not that different. Their reaction is to go after the owner or the person who's trying to save them. So we teach pet CPR first aid.
What does pet CPR involve? Electric shock, mouth to mouth, what?
Mouth to snout, for sure. We've never had a client or a student have any problems doing mouth to snout. But the first thing that we actually teach is how to make one emergency remain one emergency, not become two emergencies because the dog went after the person who was trying to save him. I did some hand therapy at one point. My therapist told me the worst case she ever had was a patient whose dog was choking on a tennis ball, and the patient tried to take the ball out of the dog's mouth. The dog bit the patient, messed up her hand irreparably, and the dog died. So the first thing we teach you is to make it just one emergency and then how to deal with that one emergency.
Do dogs get asked if they want to sign a do not resuscitate order? I'm just kidding. Helen, thank you very much. Daisy in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Daisy.
Hi, Brian. Love your show. I hear it all the time. So I'm a pet owner. My husband and I have three cats, and we recently had a baby. One of the cats had cardiomyopathy. I mean, it was like this whole big thing. He recently just passed away. We would like to see my husband and I some sort of tax benefit for the care we put into this guy. And I mean, I would have done anything for him like I would have done for my own son. Mm-hmm. Because that's just the kind of love the kind of relationship you have with your pet. So it'd be great if there was some way pet parents or caregivers, whatever you want to call it, get some sort of break, you know, at the end of the year or, you know, however that works.
Jay-Z, thank you. And so, David Grimm, there's a specific legal request from Daisy in Brooklyn who says, you know, when their cat passed, they had spent so much money on care for the cat before the cat died that she would like pet health care to have a tax deduction, just like human health care does. If you spend a certain percent more of your, you know, a certain percentage of your income on health expenses for somebody in your family, you get to deduct it from your income taxes. And apparently they don't have that if you spend that money on your pet, that member of your family. And so she would like that. Had you ever heard that before?
Yeah, actually, I believe there had been a proposal, and I could be wrong about this, but I believe there was a proposal to Congress either in 2011 or 2012 to do just that, and not just for vet care, but for all pet expenses, whether it be food, training, or whatever. And so I don't believe it passed. I could be wrong about that. But just the fact that it was brought up just shows you where we are as a society, that lawmakers, federal lawmakers, are considering things like that. Should you be able to deduct expenses for your pet like you would be able to for yourself or for your child?
How about if pets had enhanced legal status as beings, laws against spaying and neutering because they had the right to that element of their lives?
That's a great question. That's what a lot of legal scholars have brought up, that you can't turn cats and dogs into persons because they can't comprehend their rights. They have a hard time enforcing it. So say the cat or dog has a right to bodily integrity and you want to spay and neuter them, even though that's probably better for the pet and better for society, you know, the cat or the dog may not want to be spayed or neutered. And so how do you deal with that if this is now a being that's more likely to be seen as a legal person? The other problem that a lot of breeders are worried about is, how do you sell an animal that is a person? How do you, if it's no longer a piece of property, how do you buy and sell it? Can you only adopt it in the future, which some people are pushing for? So it really gets into some really interesting legal waters when we start talking about the idea of turning cats and dogs into legal people.
Science writer David Grimm, author of Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. And here's a vet calling in, Allison in Brewster. You're on WNYC. Good morning, Allison.
Hi, Brian. I can't agree more with the caller you had previously who owned the pet business, who said that the more and more we treat our pets like people, the less and less actual training they get, the more and more coddling they get, and the worse and worse they act in my office. And then I can't touch them because the owner's holding them, you know, saying, it's okay, honey, it's okay, honey, when I haven't even done anything. The pet's getting more worried and more worried and lifting its lip and growling. And then the owner actually gets upset when we say, I'm sorry, we're going to have to put a muzzle on your dog. Oh, no, no, he won't bite you. But he's showing me all his teeth. You know, this is what happens when you coddle them. They become afraid of everything.
Where's the line for you as a vet between coddling and just taking warm, loving care of your pet?
Well, I believe they should not sleep in your bed. You know, you're basically showing them they're on the same level as you when you do that. You shouldn't be carrying them all the time. They should be walking on the ground. They should be playing outside. I mean, I know some dogs who don't even go outside. They're just paper trained because the owners are so afraid they're going to get hurt. I mean, well, that's not fair. You know, and also, puppies are not getting socialized. They're being coddled. They're being treated like babies. They're staying home. And then they're not being socialized. They're not meeting other dogs. They're not developing those neural pathways to handle stress outside. So they're wrecks. They're absolute wrecks when they go out. And then it winds up, people want me to give them medication, you know, like Prozac.
I'm curious, Allison, also, as a vet, are you spooked at all by the idea of enhanced legal status for dogs and cats because there might be more malpractice suits against vets?
Listen, the AVMA is lobbying hard against this because if that happens, veterinary care will skyrocket the price because we will not be able to afford our malpractice insurance because we get threatened with suits, you know, all the time because people don't understand a lot of what we have to do with their animals. And you know, unfortunately, animals do pass away. And, you know, people don't accept it, so they go and sue us. Well, now if they can sue us for $1 million or $500,000, we are going to have to increase the price of vet care unbelievably. And most people already think it's too much.
Allison, thank you very much for your call. Good luck in your practice. Veterinarian malpractice insurance, do you deal with that in the book? David, we just heard Allison talk about how if animals get enhanced status under the law, if pets do, then vet malpractice insurance is going to go way up because the value of their lives is going to go up as far as juries are concerned, and then the price of taking your pet to the vet is going to go up as a result of all that. You see that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the rising status of pets puts vets in a very tricky situation. And this is speaking of someone who wanted to be a vet when he grew up and spent 6 years in a vet clinic in high school working and in college. So I definitely see where vets are coming from. But at the same time, you know, it's a bit of a tricky bridge for them to cross because on the one hand, the reason we spend so much on our pets is because we view them like children. You're not going to spend $5,000 on a cat that you think is the same as a toaster, or that you bought that you, just because you bought it for $50, and you're not going to take your dog to the vet every time your dog sneezes if you just view your dog as a piece of property. So vets really benefit from us viewing our pets as family. It really supports their profession. It's actually, as I write in the book, I think it's actually saved the profession in a very big way. But on the other hand, they've got to deal with the consequences of that. You know, if you're going to allow, you know, if you're going to talk about your client and their pets as family, and you know, when I go to the vet, they say, how are the kids doing? And they send sympathy cards. And they really, it's to their benefit to see this relationship as a familiar relationship. But then all of a sudden, when you go to court and you want to sue like this animal is a member of your family, that's when the vets step back and say, wait a minute, this animal is only worth $50. So, and I'm not saying that's right or that's wrong, but I'm just saying that I think their vets are in an incredibly difficult situation right now in trying to figure out how exactly to deal with this enhanced status for pets.
And I think Selma in Manhattan wants to push back against the previous caller's idea that more pets should be allowed in more stores. Right, Selma?
Yes. I understand it's a completely unpopular opinion. And let me just preface that by saying that I do believe it's a measure of any human being and how well they treat an animal that's in their power. That being said, for example, we should consider humans that are allergic to animals. My children, for example, are allergic to both dog and cat dander and saliva. So I would prefer to be able to take my child to a public building, to a restaurant, without having to, in addition to food allergies, now fear that someone's dog might walk up to him and lick him, which happens quite frequently. And it's very hard to explain to a child, you know, that is probably not a very healthy thing for them, because it will cause them hives. It will cause them, you know, sneezing and coughing and, you know, in extreme cases, shocks. So, you know, and one other problem, when we go to New Jersey, which we always encounter, people don't put their dogs on leash in public parks. And it's horrendously hard to watch dogs run up to my children and try to lick them, you know. And it's all nice and well when people tell me, oh, they're friendly, it's okay. Well,
but
they
your
may
children,
be friendly to you,
yes,
but, you know, they're not my dogs.
And your children have allergies, you said. Selma, thank you very much. David Grimm, before we run out of time, to what extent are dogs and cats legal rights in this movement grounded in their emotional bonds with us? In other words, would feral cats have a different status than pet cats under the laws that are being proposed?
You know, I love the feral cat issue because it really brings a lot of this into stark contrast. We have the cats in our homes that, along with dogs, are the most legally protected animals in the country. They have more rights, if you want to call them rights, but they have more protections than any other animal. But you have feral...
Go ahead. Whoops, did we just lose David Grimm? I think we just lost David Grimm. Well, we were about out of time for the segment anyway, and this has been great. Listeners, thanks for your amazing participation. Vets and pet owners and doggy daycare callers and everybody, very interesting turf out there now as debates are being held over how much additional legal status to give our pets. David Grimm, science writer, explores that in his new book, Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the mayor of Old Amsterdam is here in New Amsterdam today. He's going to come into our studio, and we will compare notes. Stay with us.